Hello and welcome to the Ori Spotlight Podcast. We're talking to leaders across the cell and gene therapy industry and telling you more about Ori's mission to manufacture brighter futures. I'm Jason Foster, the CEO of Ori Biotech, and I'll be the host for today's podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Ori Spotlight Podcast. We're lucky to have Betty Wu with us today. Betty is the VP and General Manager for Cell Therapies at Thermo Fisher. Welcome, Betty.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much for joining us. And where are you today? Are you at home in Pittsburgh or somewhere else?
I am staring out my window at a lot of snow here. It's actually quite beautiful out. The sun's shining and there's snow in the ground and I'm ready to go skiing.
Fantastic. We had an inch of snow in London 2 weeks ago and everyone's still traumatized by the whole thing. So you're much better able to handle it where you are than where we are. But great to have you on the podcast. And I thought we might start out, if it's okay with you, just talking a little bit about your career journey, how you've ended up where you have as kind of leading the cell therapy franchise at Thermo. You know, some of your academic background and professional background would be a great place to start.
Sure. So I'm a storyteller, so I might sprinkle a few stories in here, Jason,
as I talk about this journey,
right? So as you said, I currently serve as Vice President and General Manager of the Cell and Gene Therapy business at Thermo Fisher Scientific. I'm just shy of 20 years with the company, beginning my journey in 2003 as the Vice President of Sales for the biotech market segment within Fisher Scientific at the time. You know, again, just starting out with maybe an interesting story on perhaps for some of the younger professionals listening in, the importance of having a certain measure of risk tolerance when it comes to career development. So I was literally 1 month into the company in this new role of marketing director for Fisher Scientific. It was a new job, new company, new industry that I was just learning about. And I was asked by my manager, the VP of marketing, to run a training session at the annual sales meeting. The VP of sales for biotech had decided to leave the company a week before, so I was filling in. I agreed, you know, of course, without any hesitation, having no idea of the number of sales folks, so, you know, maybe 2,000 sales professionals there, and the grandeur of this global event. So again, going in a little bit clueless, I took a very methodical approach, you know, starting with a primer of the biotech industry and how we should think about our strategy for entering and expanding our presence in this, at the time, rapidly growing market. You know, the company's focus, Fisher Scientific International at the time, was largely academia, still is a very important part, healthcare and pharma. Not a whole lot in the applied markets, and certainly not a huge presence in biotech. So, you know, here I am in the first rotation of this, you know, training. The reps were kind of rotating through, and there was a really clearly very seasoned rep that just was peppering me with question after question. It was frankly a bit distracting, right? Well, after that session, this person came up, introduced himself to me as David Della Penta, who was the president and chief operating officer of Fisher Scientific International. And I just basically sank or melted, into the floor. I just hope that I had done an outstanding job of hiding my irritation at all of his questions, right? So, you know, he went on to ask us several more questions, ending with one that just, you know, kind of blew me away. He asked if I would take the vice president of sales position to essentially execute on the strategy that I had just laid out in that prior session. After my shock, I politely declined, providing every reason in the world why I was not qualified to do the job. I'd never been exposed to forecasting, comp plans, territory alignment, you know, the myriad other areas of accountability. He smiled very sweetly and asked me to think about it, but he underscored two things that I really carried with me. One was in taking calculated risks that would really serve me well throughout my professional career. And the second was that he said I did a bang-up job of selling it to a really tough audience on the why and how we should go after biotech. He obviously was taking a good deal of risk in me as well. So fast forward a few weeks later, and I took the job and never looked back. It did launch my career in the company. And by the way, that company has grown from about $4 billion at the time to $40 billion during my tenure with Thermo Fisher Scientific. So Interesting kind of story on, again, good to take some risks in life.
It's a tough job interview in front of 2,000 people and the COO. That sounds like a pretty harrying experience, but was good. Built character, as they say, right?
Well, very diverse audience, right? And again, that's how I cut my teeth with, Thermo Fisher Scientific. So, I've grown with the company. I've served since that time in a variety of technical, commercial, and business leadership roles at the divisional as well as corporate levels. Just very briefly, my work experience prior to Thermo Fisher includes cutting my teeth professionally in teaching and doing primary research as a faculty member in the Department of Pharmacology at the University of Pittsburgh. I followed this by a stretch of 5 years in a biotechnology startup company. Eventually, that company was acquired by Thermo Fisher sometime after I left there, but never burned those bridges, right? And finally, I've been in my current role for 2 years, heading up cell and gene therapy. You know, Jason, this is a rather unique role in that it's matrixed over many businesses and divisions across Thermo Fisher. Common denominator here is that, all develop and manufacture bespoke products for cell and gene therapy. And, our overarching goal is to leverage our total company assets, our products and capabilities to build solutions, faster than we normally would operating in individual silos, all in service to the cell and gene therapy market. We really span discovery through commercialization. And, I think our common denominator, Jason, is that, we're really looking to accelerate the development of these curative drugs and increase their accessibility to patients worldwide.
Mm, great. Definitely a shared mission between our two organizations. And I was going to ask really about that, and knowing that advanced therapies or cell and gene therapies is a relatively new modality. Thermo has deep experience, certainly in biologics and other areas of bioprocessing. I wonder, as you think about, your strategy over the next, let's say, 5 years or 5 to 10 years, how does the company and yourself, how do you think differently about advanced therapies versus some of the more traditional bioprocessing that the business might have done in the past? Like, what are the relative differences as you see them? How might your strategies, shape or help shape how you address the needs in cell and gene therapy?
Yeah, so our mission is for the company is to enable our customers to make the world healthier, cleaner, and safer. Whether our customers are accelerating life sciences research, solving complex analytical challenges, maybe improving patient diagnostics and therapies, or just on a rudimentary level, scaling their, bioprocess production or their lab productivity, we're here to support them. Everything we do starts with our customers, of course. Now, Thermo Fisher, and dating back to Fisher Scientific, 100 plus years of history in serving science. Even over the past several decades, we've really been there in helping these folks, these developers and manufacturers, think about, developing, scaling, and with that, we provide the kind of depth and breadth of products and services offering. For advanced therapies like cell and gene therapies, we derive and we extrapolate wherever possible our knowledge and experience from other modalities, like, as you mentioned, monoclonal antibodies and biologics. This can include such capabilities supply chain and logistics, building our own, enabling others to really set up cGMP manufacturing facilities and scaling our processes to meet these market demands. Now, as you know, the manufacturing process, especially for cell therapy, is complex, still fraught with many manual and open steps. And this opens up the potential for contamination and obvious safety issues. There's a high degree of variability in patient input material for autologous therapies, again, as you know, and this is a primary contributor to high manufacturing failure rates and driving COGS up. Finally, we see real opportunities to de-risk raw materials that we receive in for our own product development and oftentimes are required by our customers for traceability all the way back to those raw materials. So now maybe as I step back and think, over the next 5 to 10 years in the area of cell and gene therapy, I'd say we're driving in three general areas. First is implementation of automation and digital control over the manufacturing workflow to promote the standardization across the field. Second, we are partnering within the cell therapy ecosystem to advance the science and the technology for allogeneic therapies. And then finally, we're optimizing and developing where needed the analytical technologies for both in-process as well as QC release testing of cell and gene therapies. You know, you're probably familiar with Thermo Fisher's portfolio of analytical technologies ranging from chromatography and spectroscopic solutions to mass spectrometry, cryo-EM, imaging, flow cytometry, as well as some of our rapid analytical platforms that are, you know, very much utilized in cell therapy and gene therapy analytics today, like qPCR and digital PCR, and maybe a little bit more in the future on next generation sequencing technology. So, you know, the trick is balancing current customer needs with future needs to industrialize cell and gene therapy. And we're doing this or trying to do this through off-the-shelf automation solutions. I'm always thinking about flexibility in our platforms such that we can, you know, accommodate different applications, different cell types that will scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a super interesting point you raise about the industry requires flexibility because we don't exactly know what processes are going to work best. We're starting with variable starting material, as you said, so we have to be able to flex our process around the needs of that particular cell type or that patient cells even. But we also need repeatability, reliability, and scalability. And as of today, those two things are almost in competition with each other. We haven't been able to solve for both. And so that you talked about digitization as being important to kind of tie the pieces together, better understand our processes to underpin this, you know, flexible nature. But I wonder, you know, you talked about both autologous and allogeneic as part of the future, which I agree with. I think there's probably a both and scenario rather than either or potentially. But I wonder, you know, as you look at the state of the industry today, what's the low hanging fruit? Like what's the, you know, when you look at the challenges and opportunities, your company offers a full suite of different types of technologies that can be sort of plug and played at different pieces. But where would you cite, you know, the easiest wins, I guess, for enabling technology companies like both of ours to try and help the industry get to the next level?
Right. So I think there are certain areas where we've made tremendous progress, we and others, right, have made tremendous progress in advancing the science. And other areas that's really a work in progress, right? I had the good fortune of listening into one of your earlier podcasts with, you know, with Phil Banik, and you know, he had said that, you know, the technology around manufacturing should not be the bottleneck for, you know, our evolution and our advancement within cell and gene therapy. And to a large extent, you know, I agree with him. However, that being said, there is a significant activation energy, you know, around, you know, developing these fit for purpose solutions. And we really need to be choiceful, in my view, on where we, you know, invest in bespoke technologies, you know, where, for example, traditional methods and products will suffice at a lower cost. You know, we as a company are always mindful of the enormous expense of these cell and gene therapies that patients are largely bearing at this time. And if we don't do our part, we'll never achieve our aspiration for making these, you know, drugs accessible to patients. You know, we're placing our bets in a handful of key areas, like, you know, manufacturing process automation to scale, right, as well as standardization and analytics. We're also very vigilant in ensuring that the biology is not compromised in the process development. This is why our media and reagents are critical and a differentiated part of our offering, right? So not sure if I, you know, kind of really touched on your question here, you know, with respect to auto and allo, you know, we're investing in both. We have to, right? The larger market opportunity is obviously what's in front of us now with autologous, but certainly if we don't start the investments now in scale up, you know, strategies, you know, we're going to miss the boat in terms of allo. And allo is here, as you probably saw from yesterday's announcement with Atara. So I'm really excited about, you know, how quickly Allo is coming online, and the number and depth of science in allogeneic right now is kind of mind-boggling, but it's also very heartening to patients as we think about the future of cell therapy.
Yeah, now, a lot to delve a little bit deeper on, and a lot of exciting insights there. So I would suggest, you know, one of the things that's really interesting for us to think about is, as enabling technology companies, those that are sort of innovating in the technology space around therapy development, the way we view this is sort of as an ecosystem. So how do we partner with organizations that are doing best of breed things around, you know, throughout the value chain, so that our technology works seamlessly with theirs, whether it be software, you know, LIMS, ELN, MES systems, you know, COI, COC, or other, you know, hardware technologies like maybe a Rotea, for example, or a Dynamag that might be in the workflow alongside the Ori platform. And how do we make sure those pieces work together seamlessly? One of the things I think we haven't done well up until now is we've sort of thrown technology over the wall and said to our customers, here's our offering. And you sort of put it into your process. You know, you sort of integrate it in, and they have to do the heavy lifting on, well, how does it fit with things that are upstream, things that are downstream? How do we connect them together? You know, how do we train the staff? Of course, we offer training, but sort of looking at it as a integrated solution versus point solutions that are all chopped up into pieces that they have to then try and make it work as a system. And I think that's some of the interesting developments that I've seen, is a willingness amongst those of us in the space to try and work together to say, actually, could we make it easier for our joint customers to try and use both of our technologies in their workflow without having to kind of figure it out on their own? And I don't know if that's something that's been around for a long time and I've just missed it, or if that's something that's sort of new in this world, because, you know, cell and gene therapies are hard. I'd love your insight.
Yeah. So, you know, hopefully we'll get a chance to talk a little bit more about partnership and collaboration, but you point out a couple of key challenges to the industry. And like I said, I think we've done a reasonably good job of addressing some of those challenges. We talk a lot about, you know, the highly manual and complex manufacturing process itself. These processes need to be closed, meaning that aseptic conditions need to be maintained throughout the manufacturing process. And all of this equates to expensive manufacturing processes, and it's just cost prohibitive, right, to patients. Another challenge is that, you know, processes have been developed in a laboratory don't always scale to the level needed to produce the therapeutically relevant volumes of the drug. And the biology is oftentimes the culprit, right? And we don't have the inline analytical capabilities at this point in time to ensure product quality. So again, points to a lot of areas where we're focused. Third, and you just alluded to this, there is inefficiency in the technology and knowledge transfer between, you know, research, clinical, and commercial phases. And this requires a really well-oiled machine or ecosystem. You've heard others comment on the importance of these ecosystems, but honestly, the industry is still quite immature at setting these ecosystems up. Another roadblocks in terms of the environment that we live in today, in advancing R&D in a very volatile economic and funding environment, right? You combine that with the geopolitical challenges that we're facing currently, and it's you know, almost insurmountable, right, for especially some of the smaller companies to really continue. And this does set us back with respect to the speed of innovation, because we rely on these small innovating companies to really fuel that innovation for some of the more mature companies, you know, like Thermo Fisher. And then finally, workforce development and training, again, a recurring theme, but particularly in emerging geographies, is quite limiting. I just got back from a trip to Asia Pacific and Singapore in particular, and they're begging for the level of training and development needed to advance their manufacturing workforce. This is especially important for cell therapy because we remain heavily reliant on manual steps in the process. Just overall, some important challenges that I know many of us are laser focused on, but
there's a lot to do. It's going to keep us busy for a while, that list.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, there's a lot of different ways to chase down these challenges. know, Ori, I love the, you know, kind of the direction that you're going. You're disrupting, even though expansion has been around for a while. Expansion for cell therapies has not been around for a while, right? I admire the fact that you're disrupting the industry in that area, Jason. I think it's really important for all of us to think differently.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things that's incumbent on innovators, right? We need to be far enough ahead to help the industry kind of evolve its thinking, but not so far ahead that we're, you know, selling spaceships when electric cars are what people would actually be, you know, interested in traveling in. So it's one of those things. We can envision a fully digital, fully automated robotic future. But to start there seems like almost, you know, a step too far. We have to work within the constraints and the kind of systems we're in today while still innovating, while still bringing the industry forward. And you mentioned the Atara's approval. It was a great, you know, the first allo CAR T product approved, which is fantastic. Super interested to see how, you know, no one really knows how much or not an allo approach, a donor-derived product, will improve cost of goods or not. You know, the logistical challenges associated with it, the sourcing of donors. It's a relatively small indication they've been approved in. You know, what will the market access path look like? What will the pricing path look like? You know, we sort of assume that allo means, you know, 10,000 liter stir tank bioreactors like for monoclonal antibodies. And we're very, very far away from that. We may never get there because we're dealing with human cells. So it's incremental steps forward. I think, you know, the ability to, you know, move on from, take the learnings from auto, improve upon that. We know we've got great clinical and results. Is there ability to create platforms that can dramatically reduce cost of goods, increase throughput, increase quality for an autologous product? And then where might the allo journey take us? You know, and this is interesting. I don't think it's the magic bullet that some hope to fix all of the manufacturing problems associated with cell therapy. It could definitely be an incremental improvement, and we can find some innovation there. But to your point, I think it's incumbent upon us to work not only with therapy developers and academics, to provide them innovative tools to develop their products, but also to work with other technology providers, CDMOs who are servicing those therapy developers, to really kind of move the whole industry forward. You know, the old kind of bigger buildings and more people model, where we just build out capacity and we've got a bunch of capacity coming online and we throw lots of people. Well, there aren't enough people, and they're, you know, we might have all of a sudden we have not enough capacity, and then all of a sudden we might have too much. It's like, how do we do this in a smart way that helps us put the investment in the right places? And I think it's, you know, very interesting to hear from you how Thermo is thinking about this. You know, where are you placing your bets? I think you called it, you know, in analytics, certainly an area that needs innovation, certainly an area where right now we're dealing with, you know, a rock and a stick in the kind of evolution of tools. We're at the very beginning of that process. You know, we talk about, you know, bespoke technologies built for cell therapy versus repurposed, you know, from some other industry or some other utility like stem cells. You know, there's a lot of work to do, but I do sense there's an openness amongst the industry players to really work together and think about, you know, we're kind of in this together. My biggest fear is that, you know, and this won't happen because, you know, Thermo and Ori and others won't let it, but, you know, cell and gene therapy could be relegated to the dustbin of history as a glorified science project if we don't figure out how to get these products to patients. You know, we've been treating a small percentage, 1 or 2% of the patients who could potentially benefit. Even 5 years after the approval of Yescarta and Kymriah, we're treating very, very small volumes of patients. So there's definitely a leap forward required in innovation, and it's incumbent upon us to work together to figure out how to get there, I think. So let's move on, if you can. I'd love to hear more about, you were recently quoted, I think, in an article that I read around trying to figure out, you know, the secret sauce, if you will, and wondering kind of, in your opinion, is it really just a cost of goods issue that's preventing accessibility today? And, you know, we've had the FDA recently come out with some interesting guidance. And then also over the last month or so, they've done a workshop on distributed manufacturing, point of care manufacturing. So not only thinking about the technology and the process itself, but even the location that those technologies and those processes take place. I wonder kind of what your thoughts are on, you know, looking at the whole process top to bottom, not just within the manufacturing suite, but, you know, what kinds of innovations do you see? What do you think? I mean, the regulator through the COVID period has shown an unprecedented willingness to think innovatively, you know, and really kind of open up the opportunities for these products, you know, shortening the development cycles, combining phase one and two potentially, you know, with the vaccines for COVID, you know, thinking very creatively about that. So the regulator is kind of signaling to the industry a willingness to think differently from where we've been. And I wonder what's your view personally or from Thermo's perspective on, you know, the various other parts of innovation, you know, business model innovation, regulatory innovation, even site of manufacture is starting to think innovatively. What other areas do you see that we might need to tap into to try and solve these problems?
I think we need to crawl before we walk and run in that area, which is why we're investing and doubling down on standardization. In order to have an effective distributed model, you know, you need to make sure that the various distribution points are all marching along to the same technology, the same processes. Otherwise, I don't know how we're going to be able to, you know, kind of interpret the results. Add to that the variability that brought about through patient input, variability that I had alluded to earlier. And, you know, you come up with a problem that I don't think we're there yet, right? I don't think the technology is there yet to really create that distributed model in a consistent and robust way. So I know we've, you know, kind of pulled back a little bit from that and said, let's focus on robust technology, on automation, on consistent process, you know, so that we can at least get to a point where you can make comparisons, where you can draw conclusions and have them be developed at a standard that our regulatory agencies are going to look and nod and say, yeah, that makes sense. You know, we're behind it. And I don't think that we're alone. We actually, you know, went out to a lot of our, you know, our partners, our collaborators, and, you know, asked about their viewpoints and readiness. And, you know, many of them had projected as far out as, you know, 10, 15 years, even after Allo was, you know, starting to become a bit more mainstream, just because it's a tougher nut to crack, right? Again, for that reason, not to say that they're not important, we're going to have to figure it out, right? Because auto is not going away, right? Auto is going to coexist with Allo. In that regard, I think the first step that we need to do is really focused on, you know, automation and standardization to take as much of that manual and subjectivity from the distributed models before we can implement robustly.
I was going to say, I fundamentally agree with that. I mean, we can't even get standardization in a centralized model today because we've got highly manual processes. So there's definitely standardization and that needs to happen. But I agree with you. I wouldn't take it off the table. I think, you know, we saw just some information or some data released last week from ASH citing one of the drivers for good clinical impact is vein-to-vein time. Faster the vein-to-vein time, better results for the patient. So, you know, we need to kind of figure some of these out. But, you know, to your earlier point, we have to crawl before we can walk. You know, we'd have to develop some of these technologies and standardize them and demonstrate that they can work to the standard that's required before we think about other alternatives.
It's really a cornerstone of, you know, Thermo Fisher Scientific's strategy in cell and gene therapy. And that's really around collaboration, right? We throw that word around quite liberally, as well as the ecosystem, right? But I do believe that collaboration is one of the keys to our success in the cell and gene therapy industries as a company, Thermo Fisher, as well as individuals. Last year, you may have heard that Thermo Fisher announced a strategic alliance with the University of California in San Francisco, designed to really accelerate the development and manufacturing and patient access as well to cell-based therapies. And we felt that by bringing together UCSF's expertise in development of cell-based therapies and Thermo Fisher's manufacturing and commercialization expertise, that, you know, both organizations would work really well together. And so therefore, we, you know, kind of created this 44,000 square foot facility. And a key part of it is that we're including a collaboration center to provide cell therapies to patients at UCSF's medical center. Again, this is in their Mission Bay campus. In addition, part of our strategy, as I alluded to earlier, is to design our products and workflows in a fit for purpose, you know, kind of umbrella. And we really are basing that selectively. So we're not necessarily looking to be best in class in everything within the workflow, because as I said before, sometimes good enough is at the right cost point, price point, to make these more affordable to patients. But we're trying to identify the gaps that are really holding the industry back. We've done quite a lot of this gap analysis and competitive assessment, as well as listening to what our customers are telling us. But this is really all part and parcel of our vision for, you know, collaboration and partnership. And that really extends to our customers too. They're really our guiding light on, you know, what needs to be done first in the industry. But we do offer this comprehensive workflow, a lot of bits and pieces that, you know, customers prior to this, maybe, you know, a decade ago, would have to hunt and peck for, you know, how this reagent works optimally with this instrument platform. And that really caused us to pull together this business unit focused on cell and gene therapy to really integrate a lot of the offering in instruments, reagents, et cetera, to make it easier for our customers to access from a business perspective. But also, we're doing a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of integrating those products, you know, the reagents with the instruments, with the software together, to make it a bit easier for our customers to really pick up, adopt, and put into their clinical programs. But, you know, we are really focused on that product portfolio that addresses, you know, the full clinical life cycle and ease that transition from research into the clinic and eventually from clinic into commercial. So we're hopefully going to be supporting there and good partners at every step of the game. And then finally, you know, I mentioned the ecosystem, right? I think we're going to be in the center of that cell therapy ecosystem in the Bay Area, not only with UCSF, but with all the other Bay Area biotechs. And this includes, you know, innovators, it includes suppliers, academics, clinical developers. You know, we really are focused on identifying key partners that can establish this robust, you know, GMP manufacturing of cell therapies. So again, collaborations and partnerships within our ecosystems will enable this knowledge transfer and enable us to overcome these obstacles to essentially accelerate speed to market.
Awesome. Yeah, I know. I've been speaking with you and your team. I'd love to come out and see the site and some of these public-private partnerships that, you know, you've, similar to the one that sounds like you've struck with UCSF, are becoming more common. You know, you've seen, we did a deal not too long ago with the Cell Therapy Manufacturing Center, which is a JV between MD Anderson and National Resilience, really bringing the capabilities of those two organizations together and adding our technology into that mix to solve many of the same, you know, types of challenges, to really think about how the academics who are inventing these therapies and are running clinical trials and how they can benefit from the expertise of people like a National Resilience or a Thermo Fisher and companies like Ori, and bringing those capabilities together, I think it's a path forward that makes sense. You know, we each have our own unique sets of capabilities, and bringing those best of breed, you know, technologies and capabilities to bear are what's needed. You know, there's no one company, even one the size of Thermo, we're just a little gnat compared to your business, but, you know, even one the size of your organization aren't going to solve all the problems for all the customers, you know, and so we have to work together. Absolutely right. I wonder if, just to kind of finish that thought off, if there's any area where you would say either I wish we could go there, or there's a big gap in sort of innovation in this area. You know, is there any area of the value chain in here, the market, where you see there isn't enough innovation, there isn't anything happening you really wish there was, or, you know, big gaps that you see that remain? I know there's lots to do for all of us, but there's lots of people running trying to fill a lot of these gaps. But is there anything kind of outstanding in your mind that you're kind of like, you know, I really hope that gets solved?
I think an area that's largely untapped at this point in time is really the area of analytics. Because of the potential for the biology going very wrong at critical points in the workflow, the need for in-process analytics has never been greater, right? To be able to catch those things early, potentially salvage, right? I think that we are kind of throwing a lot of, you know, disparate technologies to try and figure this out. We're relying on flow and other analytical methods, rapid analytical methods as well, to try and figure this out. But, you know, again, earlier point around maintaining the sterility, are there automatic sampling methods for extracting from a bioreactor, right? Kind of creating efficiencies in the process through in process analytics, right? Those are areas that I think remain largely untapped. There are a handful of companies that are doing it. But again, I think part of this is the direction that we're getting from innovators. So we often ask, you know, what are the CQAs? What are the, you know, product quality attributes that you're really, you know, banking on? And, you know, we're going back to some of those attributes that are tied to more traditional modalities, right, in biologics. But are they really the right attributes for cell therapy manufacturing? So I think that that's a big hurdle and, you know, kind of where the industry is quickly going to pivot, because you could have all the, you know, great efficiencies in the world, but if the biology is not, you know, standing up to the manufacturing process, we're all in a world of hurt. That's where I think a lot of our future investments need to focus to drive the industry forward with the quality that, you know, our regulatory agencies expect and that our patients deserve.
Yeah, I think your answer is exactly the one that I give when I'm asked the question. It's just, it's almost like we're sort of in a boxing match with a blindfold on, or at least one covering one eye. You know, it's sort of, we just really aren't able yet to well characterize these processes, well understand what's happening in them. And without that understanding, it's very hard to improve, you know, to develop process improvement, to really understand, to hit those CQAs you were mentioning. You know, when we see deviations, explain why we saw a deviation, you know, set release criteria at the right place. You know, one of the statistics I heard, which kind of boggled my mind, was in the GMP process for one of the commercial CAR-T products, that there's somewhere, depending on which number you believe, a 10 to 30% failure rate in their GMP process, which obviously is not great for the therapy developer, not great for patients. Oftentimes, if a product does come out of spec, they give it away on compassionate use, and it's still clinically effective. So that really tells us two things. It tells us, one, that they've got a process out of control from a quality perspective, and that's not a good thing. The second is that they probably set the spec in too tightly because they didn't necessarily have the data to show the regulator that where they wanted to set the spec was the right place. And it just speaks to the answer to the question and some of the things that we're doing on the data side to say, actually, if we can capture some of those data in line, at line, maybe even offline, but we can plug them together so that the data flows seamlessly into everywhere that it's needed, you can potentially generate information and insights that today don't exist. You know, today we have data that exists in analog format, in a paper batch record or a lab notebook or lots of them, you know, binders and binders high of paper batch records that aren't any use to anyone. There's so much potential information and insights in there that just can't be gleaned today because we're working in analog. So for us, one of the things we spend a lot of time talking about is the need to go digital from the very beginning, to think about, you know, paper is the enemy of scale. We don't have the ability to get to scale if we're on paper, nor do we have the ability necessarily to optimize our process as quickly as we could do if we were digital. And so, you know, if you're an early stage academic research lab or you're an early stage therapy developer, you know, the big milestone in your mind is let's get into the clinic, you know, get this into the clinic, hit that inflection point. Sometimes though, if you don't take the time to well characterize your process, to well understand what's happening, there's a lot of work, a lot of rework and a lot of work and a lot of pain and suffering that has to happen after that. Once you're in the clinic, and then when you try and translate that process to commercial scale. So if anyone's listening who's thinking about these issues, I would say, you know, think digital much, much earlier, even preclinical during the research phase, because ultimately that will stand you in good stead in characterizing your process, in scaling up your process, in driving down cost of goods, increasing throughput, and increasing quality. So I'll get off my soapbox, Betty, but that's a bugbear for me.
Great point. It's another hot button as well, right, for us, and, you know, kind of goes into, you know, automation and, you know, our passion for that topic as well, our joint passion for that topic. But in that area of digital, I think about where we are now, right, just trying to even, you know, kind of create a digital solution, right, within, embedded within the workflow. But I also think about, you know, the future of manufacturing and the fact that, you know, done well with these in-process analytics, you know, we can really truly create an adaptive manufacturing process and, you know, take out human intervention altogether, right? So when, you know, this biosensor triggers out, you know, this means that you, you know, make these adjustments to the media feeds and, you know, the supplements, et cetera, and it really creates more of a science rather than an art when it comes to the manufacturing process. So really looking forward to that period of time in the future where, you know, AI and ML are going to definitely come to the forefront in terms of adaptive manufacturing.
Agreed. And I think that future is probably, it's not 15 years away. It's 5 to 7 years away, probably, when we get enough data to be able to demonstrate to the regulator that it's safe. You know, we start small first, maybe allowing a bioreactor to mix automatically if dissolved oxygen is low. Maybe that's the very first thing we do. That's kind of simple and it's well understood. And then it gets more advanced from there. But 100% agree. You know, we can use those highly skilled PhD immunologists that are now doing manufacturing tasks to much greater utility to develop better processes than some of the things that they're having to do today. We're coming sort of to the end of our time together, and thank you again so much for spending some time with us today on the podcast. I wanted to ask you a question that I don't get to ask many of the leaders who I interview, and this is an issue that I've heard you speak about publicly before in the past, but it's really about, you know, really how we're trying to build, and it's something that's very important to ORI, building a diverse, equal, and inclusive workforce and environment inside ORI, and partnering with organizations that, you know, have that as a value, that really see the value in that. And as a female leader in biotech, I'd love to have you speak to your experience of, you know, how the industry and maybe Thermo in particular are supporting, you know, women in STEM and attracting more talent and more diverse teams so that we can get the value of all of those diverse insights coming into the industry.
Thanks for the question, Jason. So I mentioned a little bit earlier about the mission of the company, but very consistent with that mission is our internal focus. And we have established business resource groups that are really aimed at an inclusive environment for our employees to feel the freedom to be creative and to do their jobs at their fullest potential. It's really for this reason that, you know, we set up the BRGs and that it inspires our, you know, 100,000 plus colleagues to bring their best every single day. Creating a great work environment is obviously really important to ORI as well as Thermo Fisher. And we could opine probably on another podcast on mechanisms for doing that. But, you know, I believe that we continue to build a very vibrant and inclusive culture. We embrace unique perspectives and do our best, our very best, to inspire our team members, again, to achieve their full potential. I'm incredibly proud that Thermo Fisher is included in the Forbes list of the world's top female-friendly companies. And we recently received a 100% ranking for LGBTQ workplace equality from the Human Rights Campaign. And this is for the 7th consecutive year. So just so you know, a bit of the commitment, and believe me, from when I started in a leadership role in 2004, things have really come a long way. So as of last year, over 48% of our leadership roles in Thermo Fisher are women. And I have to tell you, you know, back in 2004 when I started and I looked around, you know, the annual leadership meeting, you know, there were precious few, you know, females within, you know, the 100 or so folks at the time who were in, at that level. So I am just so pleased over our progress. And, you know, obviously the numbers have really escalated in terms of, you know, number of employees at, you know, 100,000 within the company. So it's really a lot to be said there. You know, there's still work to be done, right? Or we're only at the beginning of our journey. I think the industry overall is also coming along nicely. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, women make up nearly half of the U.S. workforce, but only 27% occupy roles in STEM. And again, this is a little bit dated 2019. I can tell you, I have two daughters, right? And, you know, one of them is in the health profession. She just, you know, started with a dental practice in Rhode Island. So, you know, that apple didn't fall too far from the tree. But I have another one that's in the banking, you know, business, and she is definitely a minority. So even outside STEM, there are many opportunities for women to really be represented. And so I hope and I believe I am a role model leader to my daughter, certainly, but I think it's incumbent on all of us, men and women, to really stand up and stress the importance of an inclusive culture. And so I think it's going to make us better and stronger as an industry, as individuals, and again, certainly our respective companies. So really happy to be part of that solution, hopefully influencing others to do the same.
Yeah, well, we have a lot to look up to and learn from through your kind of leadership and that of Thermo 7 years in a row. That's awesome. We're just starting our journey. We're lucky enough to have Annalisa Jenkins, who sits on our board, who's been a CEO in biotech, a chairman of many companies, both public and private. She's been at this for a long time and very experienced, and is the board kind of lead and sponsor for our Women's Leadership Forum inside of ORI, really to ensure that all of the kind of diverse voices are heard at every level of the organization. And she said to us very wisely, I think, as you've just said as well, that this is a journey, you know, and you should need a kind of a 3 to 5 year goal. This doesn't happen overnight, and see, you know, measure a baseline now, measure where you've gotten to, you know, tweak along the way, not unlike agile development, probably, as we think about our technologies. But it's something that, you know, from the top and across the organization and across the industry that we need to focus on, really, to bring those kinds of diverse talents and skill sets and perspectives into the industry. So a great message to finish on. Betty, thanks again so much for your time and for your leadership. Greatly appreciate having you on the podcast, and can't wait to hopefully see you in three dimensions soon.
Thank you. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to the ORI Spotlight Podcast. To keep up with the latest in cell and gene therapy and follow us on our mission to manufacture brighter futures for patients, head to the show notes to follow us on social media or visit us at oribiotech.com.